viewers, but we'll see how we go. Yeah. There we go. We are now live for Behind Friendly Lines. Welcome to the Thursday night show where we get on an opposition supporter from another club to talk about the upcoming game this week. And we've obviously got the Crows this Sunday at the MCG, and we've got Rob on from Crowcast. Thanks for jumping on, Rob. How are you, mate?
Chris, good, mate. How are you doing?
Going well, going well. Not as well as a team that's playing tonight. I mean, Port are flying, but at least we're not Carlton. That's probably the main takeaway from the start of the show. At least we're both not Carlton.
For so many reasons.
I don't even feel bad. Like, it's somewhat amusing. But no, thank you for joining me. First of all, we'd like to find out a bit about the opposition supporters. So how did you become a Crow supporter, and how did the Crowcast come to light?
Well, I've been a Crows fan since day dot. You know, in South Australia, it was very much a state of origin situation with the Crows coming in. So there was a lot of that old school Victoria versus South Australia feeling in the early days, particularly because most of our team were South Australian based or had come back from Victoria but had originated from South Australia. So, I mean, that kicked it off for everyone, I think, over here. Yeah. And, you know, we had some reasonable success early, a couple of flags in our first, you know, 7 or 8 years. So that certainly set us up to be the big ticket in town, and has probably sustained people over the drought since. And about 2015, you guys are probably the same. Over here, there's bugger all content for the Crows in mainstream media, and you know, we get part cursory mentions on the footy shows and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
we decided just to put something together, and it grew from a little pre-recorded thing once a week to now live streaming and all sorts of content, and cast of thousands on the panel and all that. So it's been good fun.
It's such a good form though, isn't it, for supporters to be able to connect and just vent along with you guys or celebrate with you. It's like you're saying and thinking what they're saying and thinking. So it's a really always a good connection, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we've got a good community around us. We use Discord for our community. And, you know, obviously there's Twitter or X or whatever you call it now that gets pretty rough and ready at times. So, you know, it's great. It gives it allows people in South Australia that perhaps don't have the same coverage to hear and talk about the things in more depth than, oh, gee, the Crows are good, aren't they? Or the Crows are bad, aren't they? Let's move on sort of thing. So, yeah.
Well, the Crows are doing good as it goes, sitting fourth at the moment, coming off the bye that you had just had. But prior to that, you had a 3-point loss against the Hawks, and we're sitting 17th, coming off a 79-point loss, which, wasn't one of our finest efforts. But we had that coming off the bye as well. Do you subscribe to the theory that teams, for whatever reason, struggle post-bye? Is there anything in it? It just seems to happen a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the stats seem to suggest that there is. I mean, I don't know why there would be. You think that people have been coming off fresh and
gotten
rid of their niggles and all that. Yep. But, it's obviously a mental thing. I don't know. But there's a bit to be said about continuity, and you've got, you know, teams playing every week and one that's had a break. But then you get to the finals and everyone wants the break. So
exactly. Everyone's fighting for the week off.
Yeah.
But the Crows have been pretty strong the past few games, haven't you? I mean, the Hawks loss was close, but you knocked the Lions off by 5 points, which is no mean feat. And you smashed the Swans by 90-odd, who ended up doing us by what felt like a similar margin. How have you felt heading into the bye? What's this season felt like to you compared to last year with expectation and things like that?
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned to you prior to the show that we're in the best position we've been in for years, and yet a lot of us, I guess, aren't convinced. You know, we might be suffering from a bit of Stockholm syndrome in terms of, you know, being used to being down for so long. But I think most of us are certainly happy to be back and contending. I think that we split the Brisbane and Hawthorne games, and it was kind of like we flipped the script. Brisbane kicked poorly for goal and let us in. We kicked poorly against Hawthorne and let them in. So we kind of, the footy gods kind of balanced that one out. Yeah. Sydney had a few key outs when we played them, and we're playing, I think one of our players called them a rabble.
That's right.
And they obviously got a few back against you guys, so, you know, gilding that. Did. So I think, you know, we're going well, but I think we still have a few tests to pass, I think, before people are really convinced.
All you can do is beat the teams who are in front of you, I guess. 2024, yeah. For me, I think it felt like externally there was a lot of high hope for the Crows, like top six finish and whatnot. And then I think you lost Thilthorpe on the eve of the season, which I think really hurt a lot of things. Has this year been a bit of making up for that? I feel like you're doing this year what everyone thought you would do last year, and maybe even better.
Yeah, I think 2023 was certainly a breakout, and we played a very attacking style of football. 2024, it felt like the coaching staff collectively wanted to tidy up our defensive action, and we stopped scoring, and the balance probably flipped a bit too hard, and we found it difficult to find avenues to goal against good teams. It seems like over the course of this season, we started off again high scoring, then we kind of went into our shell and had a few wet games as well, but it feels like maybe the balance is a little bit better now. So I think it's just been an evolution of the squad and probably also the coaching panel. We've benefited from a couple of ins on the coaching side with Murray Davis coming from Brisbane, who I think has been a big help for us. And so I think strategically and tactically, we're probably at the best point. And certainly from a squad perspective, we're probably as healthy as we've ever been.
The other addition you've had in the off-season, it's a person that we share in common, is Neil Baum, who has done wonderful things almost everywhere he's gone. And I know the Crows were after him for quite some time, and then you finally got your man. What's he been like at the club so far for you?
Well, he's been conspicuous by being quite quiet, actually.
He's good at that. He's just doing his thing in the background.
Doing his thing in the background. I believe that he's working remotely from Melbourne. It's a bit different to the Tigers in that he's got a board position with us, whereas with you guys, he was GM footy ops, wasn't he? So not a day-to-day role, as like a visible day-to-day role, but his speech at the AGM at the beginning of the season left no one in any doubt what his expectations were and what his mantras were, and, you know, he's very much about footy first and all that. And I think that's healthy for the Crows because we can be a bit corporate sometimes.
He's a wonderful person. He will do great things for your club and whatever club he goes to. He's a guru. Another Richmond player, or past player you've got in, as your runner, I think, is Dan Jackson, who is a very, very smart individual and a very good operator. He's been with you for a little while now.
Yeah, well, Dan came over when after you guys pummeled us in 2017, and let's just not talk about that. And he came over as I forget what the title of the role was, but was very much about assisting us in rebuilding our culture, I think.
Like well a culture documented. Leadership advisor or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, I was well-documented issues that we had through that period of time, and I think he's been integral along with Matthew Nix in rebuilding the culture and you know, bringing the squad back together and gelling us and pulling us back in the right direction. So, again, not front and centre in terms of any media or anything like that, but you can see definitely the impact that he's had on the club over the last 4 or 5 years.
And we've got a big game coming up this week. Look, I feel like we're definitely a club that a lot of opposition teams would earmark as a game they can sort of fine-tune. Not the teams go in taking it easy. They always go in and do their best. But one of the stats that kind of worry me a little bit is how strong of a contested possession game the Crows play. I think you're AFL number 2 and we're 17th in that. How much has being a better contested side improved your game, and how much of a weapon is that against other teams like us who aren't as good as it?
Yeah, well, I think that was probably when Nix was rebuilding the squad and rebuilding a game style. That was the first thing that he focused on, was ground ball and contested ball. And it was something that I think that they focused on from day dot with the new squad. And so there wasn't a lot of finesse about it. It was certainly, you know, a cold face kind of stuff. And it's still a cornerstone of how we play. At the beginning of the year, our uncontested possessions were very high, so we were playing very much an outside game. But during the course of the season, they've tweaked that, and you know, tied it up defensively, and that's brought the ground ball and the contested ball back into it. So I guess you'd find that most Crows sides would look to win at the contest and look to gain territory more than be a flashy run-and-gun type side that maybe you might be used to Crows teams in the past.
And I think, you know, you sort of talking then about having, I suppose, two different types of way to go about playing footy. That's what we're kind of craving and hoping to see. We know we're not going to see it this year, but hopefully next year we can introduce another layer because it's definitely much needed. Another big strong point for Adelaide, and I reckon you're almost very unique in this sense that you're one of the only few teams that have three genuine tall forwards that are all legitimately scary threats in Thilthorpe, Fogarty and Tex Walker. Not many clubs can boast that. I mean, Carlton go close with Mackay and Kerner, but they can be a little bit hit and miss. How, yeah, it's just a potent forward line, isn't it? Having three big men like that who can all seriously play. I mean, I thought Tex was going to probably hang him up a year or two ago, but he seems to be thriving playing his role amongst the other two forwards.
Yeah. Look, I think Tex, I would say, if you asked him, he's got another 10 years in him. But I think it's evident this year that, you know, the end is coming. He certainly had a fantastic season in 23 when he was his first All-Australian and, you know, all that. And the thing about it is he's competitive enough that you can't dismiss him. So having the three tools means that they're each of them, by their own right, are a genuine threat if you don't pay any attention to them. So I think it's been more a sum of the parts rather than, you know, three guns. We're not talking about three Locketts or three Ablets or anything like that, but collectively they stretch defences because individually they can carve you up if you don't pay attention to them.
That's it. You can't just zone off and do your own thing. You've got to show them the respect they deserve. Well, we'll have a look at the named sides. I know it's an extended bench for both teams with the final teams to be finalised tomorrow. So for Richmond, in we've got Trezias, McAlty, Lafau and Jacob Blights with no notable out yet. And for the Crows, out you've got Luke Pedler and in, Chris Burgess, James Peatling, Chase Jones and Zach Taylor. What are your thoughts about your ins and outs at this stage and who do you see making the final squad?
Well, it's a shame that Peds is out with a bit of an injury. He had a couple of games back in and a lot of people got high hopes for him in terms of his competitiveness up forward. But getting James Peatling back, I think, is really key. We missed him terribly against Hawthorn. So I would expect, obviously, Peatling to be in. Zach Taylor has been around about. He's played a few games this season and hasn't disgraced himself by any stretch. Chase Jones hasn't played this season and hasn't played for a while, so he's an interesting selection, as is Chris Burgess, who there must be some doubt about one of our tools or perhaps a ruckman for Chris to be in. He's been playing really well in the twos. But we also have another ruckman in the twos, Lockie McAndrew. So maybe there's an issue with Thilthorpe.
Because he back up rucks for you, doesn't he, Thilthorpe, when Riley O'Brien's off?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I suppose on our side, with Jacob Blight being named as one of the ins, he's actually been doing really, really well the last five games at VFL level. So we've also got Bolter and Ben Miller in, which kind of accounts for two of the three forwards. A lot of people would be screaming for Jacob Blight to come in to maybe play on the third. I think it could be just too much of an ask to expect a Broad or a Vlosten or one of the youngsters to try and take one of the other key forwards just because they're all like tall, tall, big units. So there could be a little bit of cat and mouse going on there. McAlty Lafau, I think has to come in. As much as I love seeing our young forwards with Jonty Fall and Tom Sims play alongside Lynch, I just feel like we're not competitive in the air enough. And your defence, like other teams' defence, would have a field day chopping things off. You know, we're talking about how it's difficult to peel off your three forwards. On the flip side, it's really easy for the experienced defenders to peel off Fall and Sims, the triple team Lynch, and we might get 50 inside 50s a game, but the opposition will mark 25 of them, and we take all of our forwards out of the game. So from our perspective, we're kind of hoping that McAlty comes in, but we've kind of seen a little bit of reluctance to make a huge amount of changes in recent times despite the results, which has been interesting. Ben Keyes is one I want to ask you about. He's an interesting player. I mean, he can kind of do a bit of everything, but he just gets really dangerous around goal. If it's not your big forwards doing it, he bobs up for goals almost every game, doesn't he?
He's an amazing player because he got essentially delisted from Brisbane, came in when we had no midfielders and played midfield for us. And then as our midfield group grew, he kind of got discarded into the forward lines and everyone was thinking, well, he's not a forward because he can't bloody kick. But the amount of work that he's put into his game and his competitiveness and his enthusiasm and his drive are an absolute credit to him. He was equal first in our BNF last season. He'd be going pretty close this season again after a slow start. And his energy and his goal sense and his the way he meshes with the tall forwards is fantastic. And he's a real credit to himself, Ben Keith.
Yeah, because he stays out their way. Like, he doesn't actually cut them off and get in their path. He lets them do their thing and he works around them nicely. Yeah. So he's actually one that I'm a little bit uncertain on who we might go with it in terms of a matchup. You've got a few players like that, even some like Rankin, who has added the midfield strings to his bow as well now. He's going to cause problems when he does drift forward because I just don't know if we've got someone quick enough to go with him. Again, Vlosten and Broad, bless their hearts, obviously on the older side, and Rankin was probably going to torture him for pace. Yeah, he's a dynamic player, isn't he?
Yeah, you need to try Bolton.
Yeah, I know.
Borrow him for a week.
Well, we've got another one in the VFL, Tash Houghton, but he's only just played half a game at the moment. So I think a lot of us were hoping he might have come in for this game, but he needs a bit of match fitness. We'll have a look at some of the key matchups quickly. I think this will maybe play out. I just don't know who else we would be able to use, but Bolter versus Thilthorpe. Bolt had an absolute stinker last week on Sam Darcy, to the point where if you only had two big forwards, I would have been comfortable dropping him and putting Blight in.
Yeah.
The fact you've got three, I think we need to keep him in by default. And I feel like he's best suited to Thilthorpe. It's a big redemption matchup for Noah Bolter. But at the same time, I feel like Thilthorpe, if he was watching the game last week, will feel like he's a chance to get off the chain a little bit if that's the matchup.
Yeah, well, if Darcy's a unicorn, Riley's not far off it, you know. And as much as he's a powerhouse aerially, what amazes me is his ability at ground level, his ability below his knees, and that's where he gets a lot of defenders because he will continue to hunt the ball when it comes to the deck, and also when he's chopping at it in the ruck. The amount of clearances that he gets off his own ruck work is amazing. So he's an all-round player, and he's almost like a wingman in a ruckman's body. So, and he's still a baby. So
yeah,
he will be a big challenge for Bolter because, like you, I didn't think Bolter had his best game against Darcy last week.
It was shocking. In a lot of ways, it's going to... Usually you would talk about team defence to try and stop someone like Thilthorpe.
Yeah.
But reverting back to the fact that it's kind of harder to do when you've got three genuine big targets. You can't do that zoning off that you would like to do normally. Miller might get a go at him at some stage. I just feel athletic profile-wise that he's not really as suited to Thilthorpe as Bolter. But that'll be a fascinating one. If we let your mids get clean and easy use of the ball, it could get ugly really quickly. And what will be interesting is if Uze does decide to throw some magnets around this week, because he didn't shift Bolter at all off Sam Darcy, which I found quite staggering. But yeah, if Thilthorpe was to kick two or three in the first quarter and a half, I think we'd have to have a serious look at it.
I think so too.
Next one we'll go with is Taranto versus Dawson. And I don't know, I mean, they won't tag each other, of course, but Dawson for me has this weird ability. I think he's one of the best last quarter footballers that I've ever seen. He just finds a way to stand up and get the job done when you need someone to do so. He can obviously go back. He can go forward and kick goals. He's a strong overhead mark. And Taranto's probably been our best midfielder all year, and we're going to need him to play an absolute blinder if we're any chance of breaking even out the middle against the Crows.
Yeah, I think your biggest challenge with Dawson is the fact that he can play multiple positions. So, we run him through the midfield, but, he's an aerial weapon on transition. You know, the amount of marks you see him take across the wing and half back, and then he can, you know, float down forward and take a big grab and kick a goal as well. So I like Taranto. I've always liked him since his draft year, but he's not the bloke to go with Dawson aerially. And I think there's going to have to be, as you say, a bit of team defence there.
Yeah.
Because Jordan will probably float around and to various spots during the course of the game.
And that's the one thing that worries me a bit, because we've sort of showed that we're a little bit unaccountable in our learning and infant stage of getting our zone defense right. And yeah, if Dawson just hovers around the corridor, I feel like he could get quite a few easy little chips over the top that can set him up to launch you into a counterattack.
Yeah, that's exactly. Particularly when he's getting a heavy tag or a bit of attention, he's got the ability just to extract himself out of the middle and make himself dangerous around the ground, and that's where he's dangerous.
Yeah, he's going to be a tough one. There's plenty of tough ones to try and match up on. This one I've kind of had to stab in the dark a little bit, because I know there's a few players that could maybe play on Tom Lynch, but I've gone with Butts. Is he who you would think goes to Lynch, or is there someone else that you would have in mind that would play on Tom Lynch?
Look, I think he'd be the first one, just because it's probably physically the best matchup, and Jordan is very good at shutting down an opponent. So he's, whereas Worrell and Kane are more, they have offensive strings to their bow in terms of rebound and intercept marking. Jordan Butts is very much a shutdown defender. So I reckon he'll get first crack at Lynch.
Yeah, he seems physically the most set up to do it. And I mean, we just need Lynch to be able to compete. I mean, there's no real level of expectation for him to kick multiple goals or anything like that. For us, it's just more about bringing the ball to ground, which maybe isn't necessarily a Butts issue. It's probably more to do with also then keeping someone like Markeen accountable. And that's where I think our downfall's been, because Fallen Sims will do it for small segments of games, but we just can't stay competitive for long enough. But if we can somehow keep him accountable, then it brings Lynch back into the game, and maybe he can get on the end of a few. And hopefully our small forwards can try and get a little bit busy. And the last one we go, we always like the big ruckman, the big ruck battles. Now, Kervis versus O'Brien. You know, Riley O'Brien, he's been a long stay of the Crows, and I think these guys have had plenty of big duels along the journey, and this weekend will probably be no different.
Yeah, well, Nank's probably unlucky, because O'Brien's hunting a contract at the moment, and he historically plays really well in a contract year and when his contract's up, and that's where we're sitting at the moment. And he's been on a bit of a tear. He's very people have polar views on O'Brien, because skills-wise, he's not the prettiest player. But certainly over the last month, he's been working hard around the ground and getting involved there. So I think his biggest ability is, or his biggest strength is his tank. But I think Nankervis has probably got him covered from a pure ruck perspective. It's about who will have the most influence around the ground, I think. Nankervis is no slouch there either.
No, he goes okay. They're both going to be very, very competitive and combative against one another, so it should be a fascinating duel. Where's the game won and lost for the Crows? I mean, you're probably strong odds on to win, so it's probably more about not so much where the game's lost, but what strong things do you want to see from the Crows on display on the weekend to get the job done?
Well, I think ground ball and contested ball is probably the cornerstone of how we've been playing. Being on the positive side of that ledger gives us first use and allows us to get it to our running players. I think as the game wears on, what you'll probably notice is we'll try and play our defence pretty high. We like to get our intercept defenders like Keane and Worrell across half back and really get repeat 50s. So you'll probably see that we'll try to push up pretty hard and compress the ground pretty hard. We haven't been switching the ball very much. We've been sort of up and down the ground, up and down the lane a bit, but just relying on those repeat entries and getting turnovers out of the opponent's defensive exits. So that's probably what you're going to see from us.
Which we are prone to doing, so that'll play right into your hands. I think someone mentioned this stat to me the other day. It might have been in relation to counter-attack goals. I think the Crows might score very heavily off turnover because of the reasons you just highlighted, and I think we're one of the higher teams on conceding goal on turnover, so that doesn't bode well for us whatsoever. Yeah. But look, as long as it's Rory Laird, if he gets a bit of the ball, I'll be happy. I've got him in Supercoach draft, so I won't mind so much if he sets up some play for you. He's had an okay year, to be honest.
He has had a good year. Again, another, like, there's a school of thought with Crow supporters that it's time to get rid of the old guard. But Lairdy's, you know, he continues to get possessions. He continues to sort of be a general down back in terms of being a small defender. So, you know, until a better, there are a couple of options in the twos that people wouldn't mind seeing, I don't think. Yeah, at this stage, he's holding his spot.
And if you had to pick a way that Richmond, if you were coaching against the Crows and you were trying to exploit a weakness within the Crows lineup and their game style, what would you try and do on game day to get through the Crows?
I think we're at our worst when teams don't allow us to play the way we want to play. So I would expect Uzay to try to have Richmond really run at us. If you lose the contest, you're going to be pushing shit uphill, to be honest. But if you can break even with the contest and use a bit of handball, Mitchell with Hawthorn after sort of half time, got them to run a little bit more, got them to change lanes a little bit more to shift us around and lifted their intensity at the contest. And I think that's exactly what you've got to do against Adelaide. You've got to match us at the contest and try not to, if you slow transition, you're cooked against us because we've got too much marking power and intercept power. But if you run at us and make us disorganised, then that's how you're going to score against us, I think.
Bring back the chaos ball. Just get it moving on at all costs.
That's right. 100%.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice to see a little bit of that. We found that we typically just play kind of one method of football and it's easy for teams to break down. But hopefully we can see it prolonged for a few quarters. And, yeah, if we try and, like I said, if we try and slow play, and by the same time, I'm worried about with your defensive line, us giving you quick and easy exits. So the one thing I've noticed is when other teams kick out or if there's a mark deep in our forward 50, that Tom Lynch is our deepest forward and he can't run like he used to. So teams are getting literally three kicks down the ground unopposed and it just opens up the whole rest of the ground so quickly and rapidly. And I think you've got the players with the foot skills to be able to exploit that as well.
Yeah, now look, and that's, I mean, I saw something on SEN. No, it was First Crack, I think, that said that we are in the top four for time, the minimal amount of time on transition. So the amount of time it takes us to get rid of the ball on transition to move the ball forward. And so you're right. If you allow us to get a bit of territory, that we won't necessarily score from that transition, but that's what allows us to get territory, and that's when our defenders push up and you know, we'll look to lock the ball in until we can score.
Yeah, my other concern for this game, amongst many concerns, is the Crows could be out for a bit of retribution after what happened last year. That was not on the Crows bingo card to lose that game. And I just can't help but feel there'll be a section of the Crows players who are like, we have to right this wrong and it could get ugly for us very quickly.
I was overseas on holidays during that game.
Oh, really?
And it was very lucky that I couldn't get connectivity to do a podcast that weekend.
it was completely unexpected on a lot of fronts. It was, one of those weird games. So, well, with that all being said and done, what is your final tip, including margin? You don't have to be nice. If you think it's going to be 50, 60 points plus, go with that. We understand where we're at. We're not shooting lights out at the moment. So we are susceptible to some big losses.
I'm not sure on the weather, but I think the Crows would be aiming for a 10-goal win, respectfully. I think that's probably just indicative of where the two teams are at the moment.
Yeah.
But I still feel like we're always one step away from being gettable. And as I said, if you make a nuisance of yourselves in terms of not allowing us to play the way we want to play, we can sort of unravel a bit quite quickly. So I would expect that Uzay would be focusing very heavily on intensity and pressure and all those sorts of fundamentals and just see how it falls out. But on paper and given where we are in our, you know, respective cycles, I would expect a 10-goal win would be probably par.
I think we said the same thing on our Monday night show, similar to the Bulldogs last week, that it's if we lose by 50 or 60, it's not as bad as it technically seems because it's kind of where both teams are at. And, you know, Adelaide should be doing what good teams do and putting us away. And we'll be looking for hopefully to stay in the game for a bit longer than we did the Bulldogs game. What will be interesting for us as well is our first quarter. We actually had a really good first quarter against the Bulldogs, except for our goal kicking. And it seemed like it was identified that once we missed a few goals, that's when we kind of dropped our bundle and went back into our shells. So they're going to have to find a way to get through that. And whether it's an, I don't know if it's an inexperienced thing or what it might be, but if we are inaccurate early, it could crack open quicker than we think. If we do kick accurate early on, then we might stay around for a little bit longer. And above all else, I just want to see us kick a goal in every quarter. The fact that we've gone multiple quarters goalless, I don't think is really acceptable in any part of a rebuild. You should always be able to jag a goal a quarter at least. But competitive performance is what we're looking at.
No, that's fair enough. Hey, just before you kick me off, Josh Smiley, what's the story with him? Because I rate him so highly and I'd love to see him get a run. Is he running around on the twos now?
Not in the VFL just yet. So he did have a stint of about three or four VFL games, and he was on like reduced minutes, gradually building up, and played maybe one or two at full minutes. He just wasn't getting around the ground very well. And then he hurt his hamstrings again. And they pretty much made the call that they wanted to strip some weight off him, get him really work on his running technique. And they've done like a mini preseason essentially. So he's still at about 2 weeks before we'll see him at VFL, but they reckon what they've done with him will set him up for not only this year, but for the next 5 or 10 years. He's an interesting player. I think he'll go well. I just think all that happened was he's 195 centimetres, reasonably sized, trying to run AFL, VFL midfield kilometres as a key forward body. Just wasn't going to happen straight away. So I think the fact they've trimmed him down a bit, he'll hopefully hit the ground running.
Well, we've got one the same with Dan Curtin. He's 196 he's extraordinary. Or something like that. It took him a while, but this last few weeks, like he's absolutely ripped, and obviously his engine's building and he just plucks marks from anywhere. But, I mean, I saw Smiley play for the was it Sandringham, wasn't it, or Dragons?
Eastern Rangers, I think he was at.
Eastern Rangers, that's right. Might have been against Sandringham, actually, in first round last year. And I thought, oh, this kid can play. And I reckon you've got a good one once you get him fit.
Yeah, I suppose some of the thoughts are, well, was he just one of those players that just dominated at coach level? Will it transfer? I think it will transfer. Yeah. He's just got to get used to his body. Like, how long has Curtin been on your list for?
This is his second season, but he's only really started to ease into it now.
So that makes sense. And I kind of feel like it's the same kind of thing size-wise. It takes those kids a long time to get used to the demands of AFL football and the roles they're going to play. So, maybe that's what he's got to base his game on, is like what Curtin's doing, playing up on a wing. And it's a tough matchup, isn't it? If you've got a guy of that size running up and down the ground as a link-up player, it's tough.
Oh, 100%. It's because it, along with Dawson, we've got two strong players across the midfield that are probably, I mean, Dawson, I reckon, would be a top 10 overhead mark in the comp, and Curtin over the last few weeks is plucking everything. So it makes it really difficult for teams to cover us on the way out.
Yeah, exactly. So it's maybe that's the prototype moving forward. But no, I reckon we'll see Smiley before the year's out. The language is very much, they're very keen to get some AFL games into him, but I dare say only going to do one or two at VFL level first. So fingers crossed. But Rob, thank you so much for jumping on tonight, mate. I really, really appreciate your time and your insights on the Crows, and all the best for the weekend. I'm sure you'll probably come away a bit happier than what we will, but hopefully it's a good game.
Pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me on. It's been good fun.
No worries. Thanks, all. See you on next week for the next episode, guys. Until the next time, go Tigers. And hopefully we can just score a goal a quarter. The bar's